This is Caravan to Midnight, the John B. Wells program. Here is John B.
One of the things I like the most about Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, apart from the fact that he has a fabulous brain as a thinking man and a true patriot, is the delicacy with which he handles, well, subjects of major import. For example, here's a quote: "More is going to collapse on the brainwashed Western fools than mere stock values." Now, that's what I call delicacy, and I like that a lot. So let's just talk to him right now. Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, welcome back to Caravan to Midnight. Wow. Talk about a Parthian shot. I was just looking at this thing, "Where is Neo when we need him?" And he wrote here, "In the matrix in which Americans live, nothing is ever their fault. For example, the current decline in the U.S. stock market is not because years of excessive liquidity supplied by the Federal Reserve has created a bubble so overblown that a mere 6 stocks, some of which have no earnings commensurate with their price, accounted for more than all the gain in the market capitalization of the S&P 500 prior to the current disruption." I mean, this sounds like the early 2000s when, what was it, WorldCom and one other one went pop, and then the market just went blah, just all went down into rubble. It's ridiculous. Well,
yes, it is.
Well, I mean, the whole thing is that I popped off the other day. Let me just throw some stuff on the wall, and then you just run with it. I said, look, I was talking to an economist, and I said, I'm tired of hearing about all of this. To me, if the market fell to somewhere around 11.5, 12 at the most, this might actually reflect the true value of the market instead of this ridiculous overvaluation of everything. So, I mean, where do you come up on that? What's your position on that?
Well, it doesn't look like much of a correction in terms of what's needed. But you see, there's so much interference now by the authorities. If you think about it this way, John, I believe that I'm correct that the bond market is 3 times the size of the equity market. And the Fed has been able to fix bond prices now for 7 years. So if the Fed can control prices in the bond market, which is 3 times larger than the stock market, how do you know it can't control prices in the stock market?
You don't.
I've read a lot of reports that the New York Fed has a trading desk as good as any. We saw the report recently from the Swiss National Bank, that's the central bank of Switzerland, that they hold very large positions in a number of American stocks, and that they've purchased about 4 million shares of Apple in the first 6 months of this year. So if we've got central banks as major players in the stock market, I mean, what other central bank is doing this? Why is the Swiss central bank buying these stocks? Are they acting as agents for the Federal Reserve? You know, there's so much we don't know in the financial media doesn't investigate it. You're not going to get this kind of information from the Financial Times or the Wall Street Journal or Bloomberg. They don't want to ask those questions.
Yeah. Well.
And if it's important to keep the image of the United States as a successful economy in order to help support the dollar so that the dollar doesn't come under fire as world reserve currency because of all the other happenings in the world, you know, the BRICS, the formation of the BRIC bank, this Chinese investment bank, the fact that increasingly countries are saying they're going to trade in their own currencies and bypass the dollar, no longer using the dollar for settling their balance of payments. All of this implies a falling demand for the dollar. And if you have a falling demand, you should get a falling value.
Yes.
So keeping this image of, oh, well, look how successful we are, it gives the Federal Reserve and the Treasury, you know, we have this plunge protection team. which is some sort of joint operation between the U.S. Treasury and the Federal Reserve. And as far as I can tell, this is a very opaque type of thing. It's not, we don't get any real clarity about it, what they're doing or why. It's very little reported. So this so-called correction that we've had, I mean, maybe it's not over. I mean, it may, the market may start going down again late this afternoon. But this correction that has occurred lets the Fed off the hook in which it had placed itself about raising interest rates next month. See, next month is almost here.
Yes.
This is the 27th of August.
Yeah.
So September is only a few days away, and the Fed managed to get itself on the hook that in September, well, it was probably going to raise interest rates. Not very much, but a little bit. Well, of course, the Fed doesn't want to raise interest rates because how can it keep the bond prices high? What would happen to stock values? I mean, this whole thing could, this whole house of cards that's a bubble could come down if they start raising interest rates. So they'd like just to avoid that. And so now they can say, well, look, you know, clearly things aren't as well as we thought they might be. The market went down. There's been a correction of some bits here, and we better wait. So it lets them out of that. At the same time, if they are intervening, I think it's easy for them to do since so few of the stocks account for the previous rise in the market. And since somebody can buy S&P futures and boost the market, anytime the market's going down and you step in and start buying futures, you tend to halt that if you do it on any appreciable scale. And, of course, there's really no limit to the Fed's ability to create money. If they can create enough money to support bond prices, a market three times larger than equities, they should be able to create enough money to support stock prices. So we don't really know why the market started to crack and all of a sudden turned around. We just don't know. And don't think we'll find out. But you're correct that for there to be a meaningful correction that addresses share prices in terms of the economy's real outlook, its real potential, the index needs to come down a lot more. There hasn't been enough correction to do that. But if you got that type of correction, you would disturb the picture of everything is well in America. And therefore, other things might unravel. So much of Washington's power depends on this picture that we don't have problems. That's what the rest of the world has. So I wish we did have independent financial reporting like more or less existed in past times. And people could, you know, big newspapers with resources, if they still had resources, I could go dig into this and ask a lot of questions and maybe get hearings going in Congress and try to see what precisely is going on. We don't really know.
Yeah. You know, it's the thing that's sort of disturbing about this is that if it really is, as the old Pete Townsend song is titled, an eminence front, it's a put-on. Things are not rosy, but we can change the story. It's no big deal. We can just change the story. We can print money. We can do this. We can do that. I wonder, you know, virtually all of the economists that we've spoken to say, oh, yeah, there's going to be a massive collapse. Do you think there's going to be a massive collapse, or if the entire system is, with quotes around the word, rigged, how can it collapse if the whole thing's rigged? I mean, somebody forgot to set the clock or what?
Well, that question goes to the heart of it. I think, like so many economists, I thought it would have collapsed before now. But I think all of us underestimated the rigging because it seems to me the rigging is illegal and it's being done by the authorities themselves.
Right.
I don't think anybody expected that type of behavior. I also don't think that the authorities themselves realized how much they could get away with, how few questions would be asked. And I think they've discovered that they do have the power to overcome the market. I just think about the bond price. What sense does it make for bonds to have negative real interest rates when there's massive creation of debt? It's not a sensible situation, and yet they're able to maintain that. Because if people start selling bonds, the Fed can print the money to buy them. So why can't they do that with stocks? Now, somebody may say, well, it's illegal for them to do it with stocks. Well, who would enforce it?
Right.
Or why do they need to do it? They can have some outside agents do it. Because the Fed can create money. And so there's really no limit on its power, particularly if no one is asking any questions. Now, I can't say this is what they're doing, but you have to think about the large equity positions in so many of the big companies, including many of those responsible for the gain in capitalization in the S&P 500. Well, why has the Swiss central bank got these stocks? It's the central banks are supposed to buy and sell bonds in order to either restrain a rise in inflation or in order to encourage a bit more employment. That's what their charter is. It doesn't say they're supposed to destroy the price discovery process of the stock market by stepping in and acquiring huge positions. If central banks are buying stocks, how is the market setting prices, you see? So it looks to me like price discovery function of the stock market is being supplanted by various kinds of interventions. And so these interventions can be used to create the picture that you described that they want. And so all of the real evidence and facts simply are pushed aside. They don't any longer affect results. And that's why economists looking at all the real things can't believe I hadn't collapsed by now. But that would be my explanation.
That's a pretty good one. It makes me wonder if we don't already have, people talk about, oh, you know, they're trying to usher in a world financial system. Well, it looks to me like they've already done it. And if these manipulations are possible at the government level, I would say that pretty much seals it. And am I off base here?
No. No, I think actually what is happening is they're undoing it because they're driving other big powers out, like Russia and China and India, because Washington abuses its financial influence. It sticks sanctions on people who don't do what it tells them to do. And this is simply interfering with the sovereignty of sovereign states. So in a way, Washington's misuse of it, power, misuse of the dollar as reserve currency, this is undoing the international system that has served Washington so well. So I think that it's not a good policy. And its main effect is to serve the 1%. See, nobody gains from the Fed's zero interest rate policy, except the big banks and the very rich, because they can borrow money at zero and they can go to China and get 4.5%. You have all kinds of carry trades going. You're subsidizing the rich. You're subsidizing the big banks. You give them money for zero cost so they can easily make money. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, this policy deprives all of the retired people of any interest income on their savings. So they've got nothing to flesh out their Social Security payments or their IRAs or whatever private pension they may have. And a lot of the elderly are in the process of drawing down your savings. They're having to consume the savings because there's no income from them. And they're not going to throw them into the market. You know, when elderly people don't risk everything they have in the market because it can fall so much that they're dead before it comes back. So I think the policy is serving the 1%, and the rest of the world is suffering from this policy. And therefore, in the end, the policy will have to undo itself.
Has it always been like this, or has it shifted from a somewhat credible system to an incredible system?
Well, it may be that I'm just naive.
Me too.
But I think that it's shifted. I think in the past, markets weren't managed to this extent. And I don't think in the past it would have occurred to authorities to try to use public institutions to support markets to this extent. So I, because, you know, the market's supposed to be something that finds its own level. It's not supposed to be at a managed level. And when the big capitalists themselves were managing the markets, they got in trouble and became illegal to do it. So now we have the government doing what is illegal or was illegal for the capitalists themselves to do. So it looks to me like that's a very bad development that's gotten worse. Okay, one time J.P. Morgan, for perhaps, who knows what they say about him, and a bunch of others are sitting there trying to manage the market. And they had to be very careful because their laws and so on and so on. But now the government can do it and doesn't have to be careful. There's no one who can enforce the laws against the government.
This is pretty amazing. Did you say 4 million shares of Apple stock was purchased by the Swiss Central Bank? Was it 4 million?
4 million in the first 6 months of this year. Their overall holdings are 9 million shares of Apple, according to the Swiss Bank's report.
Well, I have to say I'm getting a little less ignorant as time goes by of the machinery of finance, but I wasn't aware that banks bought stock in foreign countries.
Well, central banks buying stock at all.
That's kind of unusual, isn't it?
Well, I was surprised when I saw it because, you know, in all of my graduate training and all the classes I taught, the textbooks, the journal articles, I don't recall ever seeing anything about central banks buying equities. There's no discussion of this in monetary policy.
I didn't hear anything about that. You know, I look at the financial, I still call them the wires, Dr. Roberts. I don't, you know. What are you going to call them, the fiber optic cables? Call them the wires. I didn't see anything about the Swiss Central Bank buying the Apple stock. I have a look at this stuff every day, and I didn't see any of that.
Well, it's in there. You know, they have to, I think, unlike the Fed, they have to release a statement on their position. But, John, they also have huge shares in all of the big American equities, ranging from $250 million to $660 million. They hold blocks like that in the big stocks. And I think I either recently published these holdings or linked to them. But it's official information. The bank has to release it.
Yeah.
So it raises the question, what about are other central banks doing this? If so, do they have to release it, or how many do we know about? How many don't we know about? I mean, this is, a new development. Now, it may be innocent. It may not have anything to do with supporting the American equity market or helping the Fed support the American equity market. It may have to do with something totally different. But it does show that you've got some sort of massive purchases of the major stocks by a central bank. So if the Fed didn't already know, which I suspect the plunge protection team was very much aware of all this already.
Probably.
They can do it themselves.
Yeah, it's about all you can do is kind of laugh about it. It is laughable because nobody, if the government's doing it, folks, there is no enforcement division. There's only a cover-up division. I mean, that's kind of how I see it. But as far as, you know, regular, you know, and who are the regular people anymore, Doctor? I mean, who are the workers exactly?
Yeah.
Please say something. My head's just whirling with this because I start thinking about stuff like, okay, so let's keep Russia under control. Let's keep them off balance. I know. We'll throw a coup over there, and they're Nazi separatist, those devil Russian people in Ukraine. They're evil, and it's none of that. I mean, most people don't know Ukraine hasn't even existed under the name Ukraine before 1991.
Right.
I mean, is it reasonable to assume that that's why we go in there and orchestrate coups, is to keep a potential player kind of like unsteady on his feet? Or do we dare even address that?
It's very provocative. It's very provocative, and it causes troubles, and it breaks down the trust between nuclear powers. You know, beginning with the Cuban Missile Crisis and Kennedy and Khrushchev, the successive American and Soviet governments worked to build trust, not to destroy it. And this culminated with the Reagan-Gorbachev agreements. And this was a great accomplishment. It greatly reduced the risk of any kind of nuclear war, either real, intentional, I mean, or by mistake. Well, what's been going on really since Clinton's second term is the destruction of trust between nuclear powers. And this is irresponsible and dangerous, and the people responsible for it should be held accountable, and yet they're running the show.
Yes.
Let's stay a minute on this this false picture of the economic reality that has been created, because what could be the consequences if we have stock values and bond values that are inconsistent with the underlying economic reality and with the potential of the economy, the prospects? What is going on? All this money has caused an asset inflation. You know, a lot of people thought that when the Fed was doing QE, it was going to drive up domestic consumer prices and that we would have a hyperinflation. But the money didn't really get into the real economy. It went into stock and bond prices. So we now have an inflation in financial instruments whose values are far above anything the real economy can justify. So what is a consequence of that? If, and this serves the 1%, the people who own the stocks and bonds. So if they can prevent any correction, they can keep this artificial reality going. So what can make it collapse? That's the question. How can you have a run on the dollar if, oh, look, the stock market's high. We want to be in dollars. We want to be in the stock market. Why are you going to get out of bonds if the price is supported? So it is so rigged. What can destabilize it? That's the question. And it requires some more thought. It's not going to be the market itself if the market's under control. So if people go out and say, oh, I'm scared of these stocks, I'm going to sell, and somebody steps in and buys what you sell, it has no effect. There can't be a correction. And if that somebody is the Fed or its agents, then they can sustain this, or so it seems.
Yeah.
Unless, and even if it became clear and everybody was aware of it, it serves the rich, so why are they going to flee it? They're not getting poorer because of it. They're getting richer because of it. So you've got a rigged system that makes the decision makers richer. So what brings it to an end? That's the question. I don't know the answer, John.
You know, it's almost as though when you... it's almost as though when you see that, like, for example, just let's take some of the workers. Okay, some of the workers are people. This is an easy one, an easy example, just the fast food workers. Okay, well, fast food industry is having some trouble. People are waking up to the fact that they're being fed stuff that's not really very good for them, so they're pulling back away from that. And some of these companies are going, well, wait a minute, we'll start making the food good for you. Okay, it's like, okay, well, it's about time. Okay, we'll do it. Combined with this is the... demand for, you know, they may not ever get it, and I doubt if they will, but they're trying to get a $15 minimum wage. So the companies are going to say, we can't afford this. I know. We'll get robots to do it. And they're doing it. I mean, I think China just opened a factory, and something like 90% of the action over there is being conducted by robots. So, okay, fine. So what actually, you know, in my, like, science fiction, shall we say, affected or certainly influenced mine starting as a kid, I'm beginning to think that this society of ours may morph into something more along the feudal lines of past centuries, where you really do have a very tiny upper class and a very large lower class. And I just wonder if that's where we're headed. And if you don't like it, well, that's too bad, because we'll just have a machine do your job.
Well, John, you see, it does seem that that's what's happening, though it doesn't make any sense from the standpoint of the upper class. For example, China has a massive labor force. So why does China want to displace its labor force with robots when it needs to get the labor force employed?
Yeah.
If China wants to get off the export basis and rely on a domestic economy, which is the source of the United States' rise in economic power, was the domestic economy, not export, then it's got to find employment for the people, not replace them with robots. Because, you see, robots don't have to buy food and water and medicines and health care and clothes and pay mortgages and cars. So how, if you replace the workforce with a robot workforce, who buys the stuff they make?
Right. That's an excellent question.
This is the question that that all the offshoring corporations have neglected. Oh, look, we can make more money by cutting our labor costs. Let's lay off all our American workers and send the work to China. Well, then, how does the American worker buy the stuff that the American corporations have made for them in China and bring back here to sell? We already know that in recent years, the majority of jobs that are created part-time, you can't form a household on a fast food job, a Walmart job, a Home Depot job. You just can't. So what's happening to young people? Well, the percentage of them living at home with parents or with grandparents is rising. So what happens to the demand for homes and home furnishings and all of that? You see, the whole consumer economy is undermined by robotics, just as it's undermined by jobs offshoring. So even though the managers and shareholders of the corporation may benefit, at least in the short to intermediate run, by moving American jobs offshore and giving them to some other country, the long-run effect is there's no consumer society. There's no consumer economy. Who buys the stuff? And we can see that we're not having any growth in real retail sales. We're not having growth in durable goods orders. You know, John Williams of Shatterstats reported just the other day that we now have 6 consecutive months of a fall in durable goods orders. So how is this a recovery? It can't be a recovery. So if people aren't earning incomes that are growing, consumer demand can't grow, and so how does the economy grow? And why would investors invest if consumer demand isn't growing? I mean, who's going to buy the output from the investments? So these kinds of questions should be all over the place, but they don't. No one asks them. I've been harping on this for years now, pointing out that how is it possible that economists can say that jobs offshoring benefits America when jobs offshoring shrinks consumer demand, when it shrinks the ability of households to save and to buy? It can't be good, and it's obvious. And yet we have all this pretense. So there's pretense everywhere, and there's no reality anywhere, and that's why I keep talking about we live in the matrix.
Yes.
And what you said at the beginning of our conversation today, they can create a picture that's totally divorced from the real reality. And then people live in this picture, and they don't know the reality, and that's what the film The Matrix is about. So I think that that's what has been achieved. Well, it has to be unstable. It has to be unstable. And something has to happen for it to come apart. But it's new, I think. It's a new situation. And so we don't know, we don't have any experience with something like this.
Yeah. Well, I wonder, do you believe that this is the $64,000 question. We haven't experienced this before. Nobody's really talking about it except for you and very few others. Again, I repeat, I didn't hear anything about a Swiss central bank buying all those shares. You're not going to hear that on mainstream media. What are we going to do about this mainstream media? And if they're how do you think it might be possible to get them to do some what used to be called honest reporting? There isn't any honest reporting anymore. It's just this personality cult, and people sit there in front of the screen. They watch it for a while, and they go, "Okay, same as it ever was, I suppose." Now you go to alternative media, and they're like New World Order and economic collapse, and it's all going to Hades in a handbasket. It's terrible. But nothing really happens. It's like Monday came.
That's right.
And Tuesday came, and Wednesday came, and here it is. It's Thursday. We're still here. So what do you think might be the it's almost as though, Doctor, there's no point in getting depressed about it. Because it's just so stupid. It's almost comical. It's not really depressing. It's just sort of like, wow, is this really happening? The thing that worries me is the possibility that, you know, some huge domestic disturbance. It seems to me like racial tensions are at an all-time low, or worse than they were in the 60s. And all this murder and mayhem all over the place, and they got this president up here, blah, 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 and now they start trotting out the candidates for the 2016 election, and Bernie Sanders is like this. He just seems like a hippie to me. Could not control his microphone. Had that taken away from him. So now he's sort of moved off the main sequence. Now Joe Biden's going to step up. Now there's a real choice for you. So, and then Donald Trump's being vilified by Jorge Ramos. He's terrible. He's a dictator. And the thing is he's not in power yet. He's just a businessman right now. What are you talking about, George? So, I mean, what does the crystal ball of Dr. Paul Craig Roberts see as far as the run-up to the election in 16? I mean, some people are going, we'll never make it to the election in 2016. Things are just so dismal. It's like, I'm not sure they're that dismal. I think they're that silly, but I'm not sure they're that dismal.
Well, John, what could happen since the economic policy of the country is not focused on the economy, but on bailing out the handful of big banks and keeping the profits flowing to the rich. The economy can continue to erode. You know, John Williams says if you measure inflation correctly, there really hasn't been a recovery. They create the image of the recovery by simply refusing to measure inflation. They've created an inflation measure that eliminates all the price rises out of the mix so that you don't have to count them. And so if you don't really have a recovery, and if we don't have gains in consumer income, real consumer incomes, we don't have gains in real retail sales and real durable goods orders, and we don't really have any real employment. You know, they get this low 5.3% unemployment rate by not counting the unemployed. That's how they get it. If you're discouraged and you haven't looked for a job in the last 4 weeks, you're simply not included in that number. So, and the government knows this, and they have a second measure of unemployment that does include what they call short-term discouraged workers. And that rate is twice as high as the rate they report. So instead of 5.3, it's like 10.5. And then there's another rate that the government stopped counting back in 1992, 1994, and that would measure the long-term discouraged. That is, people who have been discouraged from inability to find a job for more than 1 year. And John Williams, using the old methodology, continues to estimate this rate, and it's 23%. So how do you have a recovery if the unemployment rate measuring all of the discouraged people is 23%? And the unemployment rate measuring only the short-term discouraged, only the ones that have been discouraged for less than a year, if that's over 10%, where is the recovery? I mean, how is this? And how do you have a recovery when the labor force participation rate continues to fall? You see, in a recovery, the participation rate of the labor force rises because people say, oh, look, this with lots of good jobs, I'm getting back in the labor force. And yet we've had a recovery. I think this is the first time in history. We've had a recovery during the entire court. We have had an alleged recovery.
Yes.
Like an asserted recovery. During the entire course of which the rate the labor force participation rate has been falling. Well, this is a contradiction in terms. So here's what I'm saying. If all of the public economic discussion, the financial press, the Congress, the Federal Reserve, the Treasury, if they continue ignoring the real reality, it's going to get worse. And then all of a sudden, bang, you're in a depression. Well, what do you do then? How do you deal with this? You print more money? Well, yeah, you can print more money. But look, it's not like the Depression of the 30s when the factories were still there. And if you goose the money supply and got people spending, then the factories were there. They could start back up. They'd call the workforce back to work. See, the factories are gone. They're in China. So many of the engineering jobs, research, design, they're in India.
Yeah.
How do you start the employment back? That's the question, and no one addresses this. They all act like, oh, well, it'll just mysteriously come back. Well, you know, magic wands are nice in fiction.
Yes.
but to base economic policy on the hope of a magic wand, that doesn't make any real sense. So we could end up in a depression, and they've got no way to fix it. And if they start printing money and it gets into the economy, the scarcity of goods simply make prices explode. So what you would end up then with is an inflationary depression. This would be another new thing.
Yeah, and I haven't heard
usually
that term
you
before.
You get one or the other. You don't usually get both at the same time.
Right.
And so what would they do? You see, the whole thing could just fall apart. There could be massive turmoil, and there's no obvious solution. So all of these things sounds like doom and gloom and all that, but people should, well, people can't do much, but economists at least should face up. Congress should start worrying about what really is going on. How can this be true? All these rosy pictures and all this underlying reality, which is different. Or we may end up in some kind of a mess that nobody has a handle on.
Yeah. When you say
what do you
mess,
do then? You go to war?
Yeah, you read my mind. Read my mind.
With who?
Yeah.
Russia and China? Nuclear armed powers?
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea, doesn't it?
I mean, we certainly can't have a conventional invasion of Russia or China.
And what would the purpose of that be?
And what would it be? Yeah.
And what will we do after?
If Napoleon and Hitler can't do it, we can't.
Probably not. Well, yeah, and what do you do after you plant the flag?
Yeah,
you're here.
Right.
Now what?
Right.
Well, now you have an ongoing insurgency against you, and you're going to be chewed up like you were just fed into a brush chipper. That's what?
Right.
Now,
right.
You know,
it's like we were in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Iraq.
And who even knows? I mean, are we still in Afghanistan and Iraq?
That's a good question. In some sense,
you know, you and I could just sit over a couple of juleps and just giggle about this, really, because we've been around. I mean, you got a few years on me, doctor, but so what? I mean, I've seen all that stuff, you know, the sack bombers, the hide-under-the-desk drills, Khrushchev pounding his fist, you know, there on the table at the UN, Vietnam, helicopters flying, body bags coming back, terrorists, this and that. And I'm just looking at this going, these humans are idiots. Look at this. They never get anything done. And, for example, I took offense at this when this guy who was he was working for a big movie company. They don't make movies. They show movies in their cinemas. Oh, he had this great job in China. He was going over there, and he was telling me, be sure and have your kids learn Mandarin. And I said, why is that? He said, because they can just hold it forever. And I went, Those dudes haven't been at capitalism long enough for you to make a statement like that and have me buy into it. I don't think so. So, now here come the conspiracy theories. China supposedly devalues their currency, whatever that means. Next thing that happens is there's this huge boom at a chemical plant that looks odd for a chemical explosion. And then a few days later, another explosion on a U.S. base in Japan, and people are going, that's payback for devaluing their currency, but was it a real devaluation or not?
No, it wasn't. You know, when China began the transition from communism to capitalism, they pegged their currency to the dollar, and the purpose was to give confidence in their economy. They'd say, look, we have enough confidence that we can peg our currency to the dollar, and that should give you confidence in what we're going to be doing. And now over time, as China has achieved success, they have let this peg vary within a fairly narrow range. And over time, the Chinese currency has appreciated substantially against the dollar. For example, in 2006, you could get 8.1 Chinese yuan for $1. Just prior to the minor adjustment of their floating peg, you could only get 6.1 or 6.2 Chinese yuan to the dollar. So you can see that's a major revaluation of the Chinese currency. Now, what they did the other day, what has happened is that the dollar has appreciated because, apparently, of the quantitative easing from the Bank of Japan and the European Central Bank. Those are the other two large currencies. So with euros and yen being printed hand over fist, and the Fed having backed off a lot from its printing, it's still doing some, but not at the level, then the dollar appreciated with regard to the other large currencies. And therefore, since the Chinese currency is pegged to the dollar, it appreciated. The Chinese were disturbed about the appreciation of their currency to the other Asian countries that are their trading partners. So all they did was step in and take out that appreciation in the dollar that had pushed up their currency with regard to the Asian trading partners and the European trading partners. And so they simply adjusted that floating peg a little bit in the other direction. Well, for the Chinese currency to go from 6.2 to the dollar to 6.4 to the dollar is not going to collapse any stock market anywhere. And so, but the entire financial press of the Western world, including, I think, the Russian press, said, look, China did this, China did it. Well, clearly, Western press had to say that because they've been telling everybody, look, everything's rosy. Look how well the economy's doing. The Fed's about to raise interest rates, blah, blah, blah. They can't say, oh, look how wrong we were. They say, oh, the Chinese did it.
Yeah.
It has to be outside the system. It can't be anything we were responsible for.
Of course not.
So there you have it.
Golly, is that amazing or what? I mean, and people were just going crazy on Sunday. Oh, it's going to all fall down. It's going to blow up in our face on Monday. They're going to kill us on Monday. You know that thing? It's like, why Monday? Why not today? nothing happened.
Well, that's right. We don't know whether it's over or not, but I think that there has been intervention, and this has reassured people, and they say, well, what are we going to sell for? Let's buy. It's cheap. But, you know, I'm not a seer, and I can't make any sort of confident prediction of what the market's going to do. But I do not think that the market is by itself determining the outcomes.
That makes very, very good sense. How could it? How could it? So in other words, the market does not have a life of its own. It's being run. I just wonder.
And think about, John, think about this too, because if we have the Japanese and European central banks quantitative easing, that means they're creating the enormous sum kinds of liquidity that the Fed was doing with QE1, QE2, QE3, right? Where does that liquidity go? Has to go somewhere.
Yes.
If it doesn't go into domestic prices, it goes into financial assets. So all of that liquidity is pouring into stocks. I mean, where does it go? It has to go somewhere. And so when you have all this kinds of liquidity being created everywhere, how do stock markets fall?
Yeah, and when you say liquidity,
yeah,
you're saying cash.
Cash. They're creating, you know, the European Central Bank, I think, is creating 60 billion euros a month.
Is that all?
Okay. This is huge. The Japanese Central Bank is doing even more. So where does this money go?
Yeah.
So we don't see any sharply rising prices in Europe or Japan. So it has to be holding up financial asset values and driving them further up. So I think where you worry about, when you worry about a real stock market correction is when all the QE everywhere ends. It stops. And all this liquidity isn't pouring out. That's when you say, okay, what supports all this artificial stock prices? What supports it? The money is gone. They're not printing 60 billion a month in Europe. They're not printing that much or more than that in Tokyo. The Fed's not doing it. So what holds it up? So I think that is what you need to watch, is when the central banks stop creating money.
Yes. Well, this is unbelievable. And when you talk about holding up financial asset values, can you tell us what is the mechanism that results in those financial asset values being held up? How does the money affect them being held up?
Well, let's see. let's just take something like the Federal Reserve's QE. The Federal Reserve, when it was doing quantitative easing, it was giving half of the money to purchase from the big banks their troubled mortgage-backed derivatives.
Okay.
So it was creating and printing money, buying those troubled derivatives from the banks. The banks would put the cash in their accounts, and the Fed would put the derivatives on their balance sheet. The other half of the money, the Fed was using to purchase U.S. Treasuries in order to support the federal deficit, and this also served to drive down interest rates to zero, so that there's no cost to Washington of having a deficit. Because it doesn't have to pay any interest on the debt, because the interest rate is zero. So so what do the banks then do when they get all these huge sums of money? Well, these are commercial banks, private banks. What did they do? Well, who are their customers? Maybe it's hedge funds. Maybe it's corporations who borrow from the banks to buy back their own stock. So that's one way. The banks lend money to this corporation, and it uses the money and goes purchase its shares. Or the banks say, okay, let's speculate in the market. Look, it's going up. The Fed's giving us money. They're taking our bad assets at 100 cents on the dollar. We're not suffering anything from this. Let's take this, let's get stocks, or let's front for people, or let's finance hedge funds. I mean, who knows? There are so many ways for this money to get into equities. But of course, it directly goes into bonds because that's what the Fed's buying itself. So if the Fed is buying treasuries, how does the price fall? If the Fed is supporting the balance sheets of the big banks by buying the troubled assets at 100 cents on the dollar, how do those prices fall? And you see interest rates move together. So if you can control the treasury interest rate, you are controlling all other interest rates because they all move together. If the treasury interest rate moves towards zero, all other interest rates move in the same direction.
You know, Dr. Roberts, most of the people out there listening to this program and every other program out there, they don't necessarily operate in the rarefied air of actually controlling their own destiny where money is concerned. And I'm just wondering, is the best advice, if we were asked for advice and we said, okay, we'll give it, what do you want advice on? Well, the best advice, and they said, well, how shall we live? I mean, we're worried all the time about everything. Other than put your faith in God and don't worry about it too much. I mean, what can we tell people? Just stay loose and be ready for whatever. Just do as you always have done. Just carry on and don't worry. Keep calm and carry on, as the T-10 said back in the stated on you know, back in World War II. I mean, is that about it? Keep calm and carry on.
Well, it's impossible to give any advice. I mean, perhaps we should tell them, hey, sell everything you got and go into the stock market on a leveraged basis, because the Fed's going to drive it up higher. Or perhaps we should say, stock up on freeze-dried food with 25-year shelf life and silver coins and ammunition so that you can survive the coming breakdown. Or, I mean, you could tell them anything and have a reason for it.
Yes.
Because we don't know which way it could go. It can go in so many directions. If you think back, those of us who weren't in the stock market were foolish. We knew too much. We knew better than to be there because we were looking at fundamentals. But of course, if the Fed has overridden fundamentals by rigging the system, then we've made a terrible mistake. Because at one time, the stock market went way up to 18,000.
Yeah.
So if you had written that up, whatever assets you had put in would have multiplied enormously. But if you said, look, this doesn't make any sense, this has got to fall, and you didn't go in because you knew too much, you lost. So what would you have told people? Who really would have told them to do that, knowing what was really going on?
Sure.
Because we didn't expect that the system could be so thoroughly rigged, or would be so thoroughly rigged, or that it could go on for so long. It's the same thing, you know, if you tell them, oh, look, it's going to be going to be inflation, or the dollar's going to fall because they're creating too many dollars, and the demand for dollars is not rising with the supply, and so get out of dollar, get into gold and silver. This would have been a perfectly rational recommendation. But what has happened to gold and silver? Well, as my colleague Dave Kranzler and I have shown numerous times, the bullion banks, acting as agents for the Federal Reserve, go into the COMEX market and dump uncovered shorts. They can go in, and in other words, they are printing up paper gold. And they go in and they dump huge amounts at barely traded times of the day and drive down the futures price of gold. Now, they can do this because in the gold futures market, it's almost entirely settled in cash. No one ever stands for delivery of the gold. So this is why they can sell uncovered contracts. They can go in and sell a promise to supply gold when they don't have any gold, because they know the people aren't going to stand for delivery. They're going to settle that contract in cash before it comes due. So the whole thing can be rigged, because the price of bullion is not determined in the physical market where people take possession of the actual metal. It's unusual. It's determined in a futures market where they don't take possession of gold, but speculate on price moves. And so this makes it possible to drive down the price of gold and silver, even though there's a huge demand for the metals themselves. For example, the price of silver has been falling when all the coin shops can't get any silver. So how is it, when you can't supply silver, that the price is falling? How can the price fall when the demand is going through the roof and the supply is disappearing, and yet the price is falling? This can only happen because they have rigged the futures market, and the big bullion banks can sit and print as many paper contracts that for which they have no backing, and dump them in the market and drive down the other prices. In the, you know, they force stop loss orders, so they trigger those orders. They sell margin calls. Who uses this COMEX market? It's largely hedge funds. They take these gold positions. They have no interest in ever having the gold, but they take these positions in order to show there's a balance in their risk, and this helps them market their products. It's kind of a mathematical thing that runs the decision. And so it's valuable to them from the standpoint that it shows they can cover certain ratios in their risk picture. And so they're not really worried about their losses. And so this type of market, so if you had told people, well, look, all this money printing has got to come to no good end, and it has to drive up gold and silver prices. That's true. It's exactly true. But what people didn't know was, hey, look, the Fed can rig these prices too. And so all the good advice ends up being bad advice. And the bad advice ends up working. That's what we're witnessing and have been witnessing.
You know, this may seem a little far afield, Doctor, but I just spotted this article. I just want to run it past you. It's pretty short. An article by Stanford and UC Berkeley researchers seems to suggest that conservatism is a mild form of insanity. It says, here are the facts. A meta-analysis culled from 88 samples in 12 countries with an N of 22,818 revealed that several psychological variables predicted political conservatism. What variables exactly? In order of predictive power, death anxiety, system instability, dogmatism intolerance of ambiguity, closed-mindedness, low tolerance of uncertainty, high needs for order, structure, and closure, low integrative complexity, fear of threat and loss, and low self-esteem. The researchers conclude a little chillingly that the core ideology of conservatism stresses resistance to change and a justification of inequality. How do we expect a population of people, a citizenry of a country, to embrace this brand of academic genius and go forward in any kind of a productive manner, let alone develop any critical thinking skills? Or am I one of the nutcases that they're talking about in the article?
John, you know, there's probably something to what they're saying. Not with regard to you, of course, but
oh, of course,
but these kinds of tendencies, conservatives do have some of them, and they do tend to make them ineffectual in certain circumstances. But of course, liberals, if there still are any, they have similar problems. They have certain traits that make them ineffectual in certain circumstances. So I think on the whole, humans tend to be mistake prone. I mean, if you look at history, you see so many mistakes.
Yes.
Just mistake after mistake, and the mistakes can lead to disastrous, catastrophic results. So, knowledge or information, good information, it's almost always lacking when you need it, which is one of the things I'm complaining about. It seems to me we're in a new type of situation, and we've got very little information about it, and very little curiosity on the part of the media to try to see what is this a new situation? What information do we need about it? For example, why are central banks buying stocks? How can the price of gold and silver decline when the demand is going through the roof and the supply is constrained? You see, after the last article that Dave Kranzler and I did together on my site about the manipulation in the gold market, I wrote to the Commodities Futures Trading Commission, who is supposed to regulate this thing. I wrote to them a short letter, sent the article, and asked, how can this be going on? What's going on? Do you have a position on this? Of course, I haven't heard a word and don't expect to. Which tells you that even the regulatory authorities are not interested. So, how can you get at this?
I don't know.
So the problem that I keep raising is, okay, we can see some things are different. Where is it going? We need to be exploring this. If it gets there, what's it going to look like and what can we do about it? And why is it that we need all this liquidity? Who is it serving? What is the purpose of it? The official line from the Federal Reserve is, oh, this is helping the economy. Well, it clearly isn't. We've had how many years of this money printing have we had? And where is the sign of it? There's no growth in consumer incomes. We've got at least 10% unemployment if you include the short-term discouraged. We've got 23% if you include the long-term discouraged. We have asset bubbles, but no real life in the economy. The new home sales and existing home sales are both far below the peak before the downturn in December of 2007. How can we have had all these years of recovery? Officially, we've had a recovery since June of 2009. And yet, new home sales are like 67% below where they were in the previous peak. Existing home sales are like 27% below where they were in the existing peak. How is this a recovery? Years of deficits, years of money creation. And where is it? The recovery, we don't have it there. It's not there. Where are the jobs? How come college graduates have to get jobs as waitresses and bartenders? why do the retired elderly have to go take the part-time jobs in Walmart?
Yeah,
because they don't have any interest income, and they need something to flush out the Social Security pensions. This is not a recovery. All of this, but there's no discussion. There's no, hey, what's going on? What is this liquidity doing? It's making the 1% richer. That's all it's doing. It's doing nothing else. And yet it goes on and on and on. And that's because the 1% are the ones making the decisions. Look, who who runs the Treasury? It's all the former CEOs of the big banks that caused the problem. It's the bank executives running the regulatory industries, the agencies. Who runs the Fed? The big banks. So the policy is serving a handful. And the longer it goes on, the worse the situation in the underlying economy gets. So, but where is any awareness? Nobody. You can't get it. Now, when I was at the Wall Street Journal in the 70s, late 70s, we would have been all over the story. We'd have been all over it. Congress would have been having hearings. When I was in congressional staff in the 70s, be hearings everywhere. What is this? Explain it. The Joint Economic Committee would be having hearings. The discussion would be everywhere. Well, there's no sign of a discussion.
Yeah, I don't understand that at all. And I don't really know where to take it from here. How can you compel them to talk about it?
I don't know. I wrote to them about it and don't even get an answer.
Don't even get an answer. You don't get an answer. If I wrote them and didn't get an answer, that wouldn't be surprising. For you to write them and you don't get an answer, that's just plain weird.
Unless the former Assistant Secretary of Treasury for Economic Policy, and I write to them and I say, look, what is going on? What's your explanation? Nothing. No response. They don't even say thank you for asking us.
It sounds to me like they don't want to answer you, not because they're busy.
We've had a number of whistleblowers, John, and then probably we should wind this down.
Yep.
We've had a number of whistleblowers who have said, one on his retirement, he was an SEC lawyer, He said that in his retirement, he said, all of my cases against the banks were deep sixed by the political higher ups because they're hoping to get good jobs from the banks when they leave the regulatory agency. And so I wasn't permitted to go forward with indictments. Well, that didn't do him any good to say that. And we have had other statements about how the regulatory authorities are actually covering up for the people they're supposed to be regulating, because when they leave the government service, they get really good jobs from those whom they protected.
Yeah.
So this type of system really hasn't got any way of self-correcting.
All right.
And so it has to go into a mess.
Yes. I guess that's just the way it is. Listen, thanks for staying with us for a while longer. I know you were good for an hour, but you always stay a little bit longer. And of course, we welcome that every chance that we can. It's great talking with you. You just, you bring some light into a gloomy spot. And it's obvious the system is just every bit as corrupt as people think it is. And people work in their own self-interest. And sooner or later, the humans are going to mess up. They don't mean to. They just do. Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, thank you very much.
It's always fun talking to you. It really is. I look forward to the next time.
Me too. God bless, sir. Stand by. More to come.